shines on the dead. Sun shines on you and me, wherever we lay our heads. The sun shines on the evil. The sun shines on the good. It doesn't favor righteousness, or though you wish it would.
David Byrne, Back in the Box. You're listening to Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman. As we go to Israel and the occupied territories right now, continuing our conversation with Dr. Galia Golan, a member of the elected executive of the Meretz Party, leader of Peace Now, as well as Abu Leila, who is a well-known Palestinian leader. And I'm going to start with you, Abu Leila, head of the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine in the West Bank. First, let me ask you, are you afraid of assassination?
I think that an attempt of assassination is possible. There is a long list of political and national leaders that are okayed and approved by the Israeli government, and it's not completely impossible that my name could be on that list, but I should say that this does not affect in any way neither my activity nor my political decisions or political affiliations. I want to say that Abu Ali Mustafa was not responsible for what they call bombings or bombed cars or anything. In actual fact, he was the leader, the top leader of the Popular Front, and he was responsible for the Popular Front political and work amongst the masses. And his assassination shows that what the Israelis are actually doing is that they want to eliminate the Palestinian leadership in general in order to put the Palestinian movement and the Palestinian Intifada into complete disarray. But I think that this is a venture which will turn out to be an illusion, and it will have negative reflections on their situation and their future.
What impact do you think Palestinian suicide bombers have had?
Look, I represent a faction, actually, that does not approve of this kind of operations or of this kind of tactics. I represent a faction that is involved in the resistance, the armed resistance, but with concentration merely on military targets, and especially those targets that has that have to do with illegal Jewish settlements in the occupied territories. And in spite of that, I think that when you have a people that is being bombarded, humiliated, put to the verge of hunger by the Israeli closure, and in a state of complete desperation, after 10 years of attempts to arrive at a political solution that many Palestinians thought that would bring them the future and the hope of independence and the end of the occupation, in order to discover 10 years later that we are going in actual fact to actually nowhere, but to the recreation and organization of the occupation under other pretenses and other names. After that, and when the Israelis are bombarding Palestinian cities and Palestinian villages with F-16s, I do not think that it would be completely ununderstandable to see desperate people who would take this kind of retaliation on their responsibility.
Let me ask one of the leaders of peace now, Dr. Galia Golan, do you think that the U.S. should withdraw military support for Israel?
I think what the United States could, and I would hope will do, is bring pressure on both sides to get back to the negotiating table without any precondition. And that is to say, to immediately get back to the negotiating table. The condition that's been set by Prime Minister Sharon is that there has to be 7 days of absolute quiet before we can even begin a period of a ceasefire, before we can even begin to talk again. I think that this is an impossible precondition, an impossible condition or demand to meet. And given the terrible escalation that's taking place, I think it's all the more urgent for a third party, and I think the United States is that third party, to bang some heads together and get us back to talking. And I think it's only once we start talking that there will be something for each side to feel it can gain by stopping shooting. And I think that's where we are now, is that there's a sense on both sides of hopelessness, that there's no hope and that there's no alternative. Certainly in the Israeli public, and this is, of course, one of the problems that the peace movement has today in Israel, the Israeli public generally is on the one hand supportive, according to the polls, of a two-state solution, but on the other hand, a very high percentage, according to the same polls, do not believe that there's a partner, do not believe that the Palestinians are interested in talking, that Israel or Barak made a great offer last year and it was turned down by the Palestinians, who prefer the Intifada. And this is what we have to contend with, is that we in the peace movement are trying to win back that part of the public and to assure them that there is a partner on the other side, that it is possible to reach a peace agreement, that we must start talking and there's something to talk about. And I think that in a sense what we have here is a parallel development on both sides, and that is the tremendous frustration and then ultimately disappointment with the peace process. Each one believing, of course, that the other side is the guilty party. But amongst our public, what we have to do is, on the one hand, try to re-educate in the sense of explaining just what has happened, and more important than that, number two, to rekindle the belief that there is a peace agreement possible, the same way as we just heard that Palestinians who became frustrated with the 10 years of no progress in the peace process and the continuation of the occupation, I think also have to be given something to indicate that a peace agreement is possible once again and that it is important to return to negotiations. This is where we are. I think enormous damage has been done. Enormous damage has been done on both sides in the destruction of any belief that peace is possible. We in the peace movement and Peace Now certainly do believe that peace is still possible, that a two-state solution is the basis for an agreement between Israel and the Palestinians, and we believe that this can be reached. And in fact, one of the things that we've been saying is that even all this violence and certainly the effort at a military, quote, military solution to the current problems and the terrorist bombings or whatever, the military solution isn't going to do anybody any good. And even if we wind up with an all-out war, in the end, we're going to have to go back to the negotiating table. And in the end, we all know that the only basis for an agreement is going to be a two-state solution. So the whole thing has just become tragic and totally senseless from the Israeli point of view.
We're talking to Galia Golan, who is a leader of Peace Now in Israel, and Abu Leila, who is speaking to us from Ramallah, head of the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine in the West Bank. Abu Leila, journalist Robert Fisk has called Gaza a land without hope. What hope do Palestinians have that the occupation can be ended peacefully?
I want to say first that the vast majority of the Palestinian people are actual partners of peace. The absolute majority of the Palestinian people are looking forward for a peaceful settlement that will guarantee their right to have an independent and sovereign state within the borders of the 4th of June 1967, with East Jerusalem as capital. This is the aim that we are fighting for, and when the Palestinian people continue the fight, it is only because they have come to a conviction that this is the only way to end the Israeli evasion from this from the implementation of this solution that is already provided by dozens of international resolutions. I would like to say second that the problem is not a problem of violence. We are against violence. I am personally against violence. And I think any rational people would not resort to violence unless unless he was forced to that. But the question is that the root of the problem is the continued Israeli occupation of our territories. And unless this root of the problem is addressed, all the calls to end the violence will actually come to nothing, because it has been attempted once and twice and three times before, and every time we come from one confrontation to another, and each confrontation is more fierce and more brutal than the one that preceded it. I believe that I am confident, and most of the Palestinian people are confident that one day, whether Mr. Sharon likes that or not, this Palestinian state will be born, and it will be completely sovereign and completely independent, and the occupation will come to an end. But what we are hoping for is that this end and this aim could be achieved with as little and as soon at a time as possible, and with less sacrifices for both sides of the struggle and for both peoples. And I hope that the activities of the peace-loving Israelis will help in that direction. But I would like to say that they could be more active, actually, if they do not try to repeat again the attempt or the experience of their position towards the Oslo Accords and the gradual development towards peace. What is needed now is to stand up clearly and to say the occupation is the root of all evils and of all problems, and the occupation and peace will be guaranteed, because we on the Palestinian side are not only for peace, but we actually are striving for peace.
Dr. Galia Golan, what is your biggest difference, would you say, with Abu Layla?
I think probably my biggest difference is on the methods. I would certainly agree that the occupation is the whole point. And, of course, that's from the very beginning how the peace movement was founded here, was to fight the occupation, to try to bring about an end to the occupation. I think the difference is over means, and it's our conviction that the only way to do this is through peaceful means, through negotiations. And, of course, that was exactly what we have been pressing every Israeli government to do from the time that Peace Now was created in 1978. That was exactly what we demanded, was negotiations with anybody willing to negotiate with the State of Israel. And of course, that is ultimately what happened, first with Egypt and then with the PLO at Oslo and so forth. We, of course, also fought things such as the building of settlements, which we feel were an enormous impediment to reaching a peace agreement. But as I say, our most important point is that these things must be done through negotiations. The problem with the extreme right wing in Israel, and I'm afraid with the Sharon government, is that they believe that there's a military solution to this whole issue, and we do not believe that. I think that there are also elements on the Palestinian side who also have given up on the political solution or the political road and are opting for military means or armed means. In our opinion, what we have to do is to stop the violence. It doesn't help the peace process or the forces for peace, of course, to have bombs blowing up in the middle of cities, and no more than it helps the peace process to have these closures and bombs blowing up in the Palestinian territories and missiles shot and planes brought into action and so forth. Neither of these things is going to give us the possibility of reaching an agreement or of mobilizing support for an agreement or of changing, in the case of Israel, getting a government that will bring about a peaceful solution. So that's where I think we have to go, and this has been our major point. And that's why I go back to saying that what we have to have is negotiations without any precondition. This will be a means of stopping the violence on both sides. We would hope we have a leg to stand on. If we have negotiations, we can try to get somewhere. And as I said before, I think we have a basis for those negotiations now, and that's the Mitchell Committee recommendations. Where it will lead us, this we have to see, but we first and foremost have to get there.
This, you're saying, difference you have with Abu Layla over means. Abu Layla, your response as head of the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine in Ramallah.
I would like to say that I completely support the call for negotiations without preconditions, negotiations that are based on international legitimacy, on the necessity of implementing international resolutions, and especially Resolution 242. This is an option that I completely support, but I would like to say, first of all, that this is an option that cannot be accepted by the Sharon government. So if this option could be in any case realistic, I think this government would have to go. And secondly, I would like to say that we have tried the Palestinian movement in general, especially the PLO, have tried 10 years of continuous and obsolete negotiations. When the Intifada started, it was started as a completely peaceful movement within 1 week, actually, without a bullet coming out from the Palestinian side. There were about 50 martyrs on our side. And I do not think that any people would take all this kind of aggression against a peaceful mass movement without retaliating with all the means that they have in their power. So this is how the violence erupted. And the only way to stop this violence is not only to start negotiations without preconditions, but that these negotiations will be first based on international legitimacy, and second, will come to a peaceful and fruitful outcome with the end of the occupation as soon as possible.
Final question to both of you, and that is, could you have this discussion openly, say, in Israel proper or the West Bank, the two of you sitting together?
Well, if yes, the answer is absolutely yes, provided that the Israeli army would let me go to Ramallah. They have let me go on occasion, and we have had discussions like this with leaders of the PLO. And in fact, very recently, as a result of these discussions, we published a joint declaration of Israeli intellectuals and leaders of the peace camp, and Palestinian intellectuals and some members of the Palestine Authority, including Abed Rabbo, who's a minister, of course, in the Palestine Authority. We did publish a joint declaration in both the Arab press, the Palestinian press, and the Israeli press, calling for an end to this tragic situation, an end to the occupation, an end to the violence, a return to negotiations. A rather long declaration. It was not easy to reach agreement on everything, but we felt both sides that it was very important, and we did do this publicly, and nobody got martyred for it. I don't say that everybody on both sides agreed with everything in it, but I think, yes, we can do this kind of thing publicly, and I think increasingly we do have this happening now here.
Well, I want to... Abuela?
Yes. Unfortunately, I do not think it would be possible with me, with the Israeli army surrounding Ramallah, to leave Ramallah to meet anyone anywhere else. But I would like to say that I was not a party to the meeting that Dr. Golan is referring to, and I did not completely agree with the text of the joint communique that she's referring to. But I am ready, and I belong to a faction that has actually met officially with representatives of the Meretz movement and many other Israeli personalities, including there was the famous handshake between our general secretary and Mr. Wiseman, the Israeli president then. That was 2 or 3 years ago. I have no objections to meeting with any Israeli a person or a party or a movement with one condition, that they agree to and support the call for a peaceful settlement which is based on the Palestinian right to an independent and sovereign state within the 4th of June borders.
Do you support that, Dr. Golan?
Absolutely.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for being with us. It's interesting because I don't think there's any such public discussion in the United States mainstream media like we've just had here. Dr. Galia Golan, member of the elected executive of the Meretz Party, leader of Peace Now, professor of political science at Hebrew University in Jerusalem, and Abu Leila, head of the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine in the West Bank. Abu Leila speaking to us from Jerusalem. Dr. Golan speaking. Abu Leila speaking to us from Ramallah. Dr. Golan speaking to us from Jerusalem. You are listening to Democracy Now! Thanks very much, both, for being with us. We'll be back in a minute.
Now I need an oasis, a place to hide from the day. I'd like a little dark, tiny room where the music plays. Maybe you just lost somebody. The whole world has changed. The sun don't really care about that. It shines on anywhere. Johnny, are you still awake? Oh, Johnny, I'm terribly scared. I'm going back in the box.
You are listening to Democracy Now!, Free Speech Radio, Breaking the Sound Barrier. I'm Amy Goodman. Lawyers for death row prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal filed court papers yesterday alleging that the original judge in the case made a racist comment about Abu-Jamal. The affidavit was signed by Terry Marr Carter of Delaware, and it said that as a stenographer in 1982, she overheard Judge Albert Szabo saying he was going to help him fry Abu-Jamal. She also alleged that the judge used a racial slur to describe Mumia Abu-Jamal. He's a celebrated radio journalist, writer, and former Black Panther, sentenced to death for the December 81 shooting death of Philadelphia police officer Daniel Faulkner. Abu-Jamal has maintained his innocence. His case has attracted international attention. Delegations from around the world traveled to Philadelphia 2 weeks ago for what was expected to be Abu-Jamal's first court appearance in years. Less attention, however, has been paid to Zachary Running Wolf Brown, a Native American man who's running across the United States from the Bay Area to Philadelphia to raise awareness about the death row prisoner's case. We go to him right now. Zachary Running Wolf Brown, can you tell us where you are right now?
I'm 15 miles outside the city of Chicago, which I'll be running into today. And I'm running across the country for Mumia Abu-Jamal, running for a fair new trial.
Can you talk about your route?
I started in at the Federal Building in San Francisco, and I ran through California, through up to the Sierras, and through the Nevada desert onward to Salt Lake City. From there, we picked up a film crew, which is filming a documentary on this. We then went through the Rocky Mountains to Denver, Colorado. From there, we went up to the Lakota Reservation, and which was very significant because I'm Blackfeet and the Lakota are not necessarily historically rivals. And so I was trying to cross some bridges by extending the arm of friendship to the Lakota Nation, which went well. And then we went down to Lawrence, Kansas, to Leavenworth, actually, and tried to get an interview with Leonard Peltier and say a prayer outside the prison. From there, we came straight here straight on to Chicago through Iowa.
Any luck with the interview with Leonard Peltier?
We did not get, it's a long process, and we needed press credentials, which my filmmaker did not have. He was an independent filmmaker. And it's a two-week process, and they were not allowing a lot of people to conduct interviews with Leonard. It kind of goes seasonal, and they get, you know, sometimes they let people in and do it, and right now they're not letting even the major press people in to see Leonard. And so about, 400 miles away, we decided to just go by and say a prayer. There's a chance to, if we had done a protest outside, that they would have taken it out on Leonard. In other words, they would have thrown him in the hole. So we decided at that point that it was for Leonard's sake, just that we would go by and say a prayer, and because we did not want to, cause him any discomfort. I mean, serious discomfort.
We're talking to Zachary Running Wolf Brown. He is running across the country for Mumia Abu-Jamal. How did you get involved in Abu-Jamal's case?
I must admit that I was quite ignorant about Mumia's case. I was running through California on my second run, 1,000 miles through California, and I was, just praying and thinking about Leonard Peltier and thinking about running across the country for Leonard. And, the press would and most people would just take it as another Native American running for Leonard across the country. And I thought, what would be the best way? And then all of a sudden it dawned on me nobody has really crossed the racial lines. And So Mamiya just started to pop into my mind and now my heart, and I just started to educate myself about you know, his case, and just started, you know, basically, you know, what a powerful statement, a red man running across the country for a black man on death row.
And what has been the response, particularly on Native American reservations?
The response on the Native American reservations has been tremendous. In fact, we sent out 556 different letters to Native American governments. And we're starting to get responses on a resolution, which is on our webpage, stating for a fair new trial for Mamiya, as most Native American nations identify with Leonard Peltier. Unfortunately, because the dominant society has tricked us all into staying in our own colored lines, there is a great ignorance to Mamiya's case, including myself. So, you know, a lot of it is just trying to educate and trying to, you know, they've never heard of him. And I think this is a problem also in the African American community, where we've visited also in the urban environments, that even African Americans are very ignorant on the case. And, you know, whenever you say cop killer, you know, people really just close their ears and trying to deal with this.
You have run before across the country. Can you explain what you were running for then and how people are, you know, the comparison of response?
Yes, there is a difference. My first two runs, one was my run home, spiritual run home to the Blackfeet Reservation, and that was 1,500 miles. And the second one was 1,000 miles through California to get the Native American casinos to be responsible, the urban Native American nonprofits, which is a big issue in California. The response was, especially by the media, quite different. The media was we had ABC, NBC, CBS, AP Press. I was even spotted on CNN. And now, I was really shocked in the Bay Area. I couldn't even get a high school newspaper out there because the press is completely decided to black this out. Whether they're scared of Mamiya's case, or they're thinking about the bigger issue of Native Americans coming off the mat and really crossing the racial lines and really starting to take a role in leadership in this country.
Zachary Running Wolf Brown, what's the difference in media coverage of these different issues of you as you run?
Well, the media coverage, you know, it was covered. Here we're talking to you guys. I mean, it's fantastic. This is what part of the first media that we're getting. I mean, we got small media when we came over the Rocky Mountains, but here I've covered 3,300 miles, and I'm on the edge of Chicago, and the Tribune, the television stations are not interested in what I'm doing. And here, just, you know, I'm crossing racial lines. It's a controversial case. And let alone the physical put out that I'm doing is, you know, it will end up to be about 120 days of running 30 plus miles. In other words, I'm doing a marathon plus every day for 120 days.
How are you doing it?
Well, it's difficult to explain unless, I mean, it's hard to explain because I'm not doing it alone. In other words, you know, my ancestors are with me, and it's a very powerful, a very spiritual thing. And if I wasn't doing it for something like the, justice, you know, complete justice, I could not do this.
How old are you?
I'm 38 years old. Mm.
30 miles a day.
Yeah.
What's your route from Chicago, where you are 50 miles outside of?
From Chicago, we're gonna venture down and go by the prison where Mamiya is held, and just say a prayer, because maybe some retribution will be held against him, and we're gonna be fairly quiet about that, and then just run straight to Philadelphia, and it's, you know, it's the last leg of the trip. It's about 750 miles, and so we're going to be ending on September 27th in the streets of Philadelphia.
If people want to get in touch with you, follow your journey, can they go somewhere on the web or call?
Yes, this year they can call my direct cell phone, which I'm very, very much appreciative of a good word, or just any education on and support for Mamiya's case and what I'm doing. They can call me at 925-202-8062. And my webpage, it's very difficult to, it's in Blackfeet. It means all tribes, but I'll spell it for you, and I'll spell it slow. It's K-A-N-A-T. SITAPIIKSI.org, and you can follow the information. And there's a resolution on the webpage, which if you have an organization, a labor organization, a nonprofit organization, a tribal affiliation, or any other.
Well, Zachary Running Wolf Brown, we have to wrap up right now. I want to thank you for being with us, running across the country for Mumia Abu-Jamal. And that does it for today's program. Democracy Now! Is produced by Chris Abrams and Brad Simpson. Anthony Sloan is our music maestro, and engineer Errol Maitland, our spiritual technical director. Thank you to Pacifica stations, especially KPFA and KPFK, who says we don't believe in Hollywood stars. Roy, thank you. Our affiliate stations, WEOS, KGNU, KZYX and Z, KOPN, KRCL, WRPI, WMNF, KSVR, WGDR, KUNM, WERU, WORT, broadcasting from downtown community television from in the exile from the embattled studios of WBAI. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening to another edition of Democracy Now!